What's up, y'all? Welcome. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. NFL Ready with Sean Gibson. Josh Yellen is here, and he was just complimenting me, but it was kind of in a mocking way about the way I introduced
the
podcast.
No way, man. It's a tagline. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. Action Jackson!
All right, wow. You really did yell it. So, all right. This episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/NFL ready. We're talking with Sean Gibson, a graduate of the University of Houston, and he is now the head athletic trainer for the Buffalo Bills. So, Sean, I want to hear just a little bit about your athletic trainer story. I see you went to University of Houston, Stephen F. Austin, and then you did your summer internships with the Redskins, the Giants, the Bills, and then now you're the assistant, and now you're the head athletic trainer at the Buffalo Bills. So what are we missing there in your timeline as an athletic trainer?
Well, that's pretty much my timeline. The only difference is, you know, I came from a small town in Bay City, Texas, where I was an athletic trainer, and I was a student trainer for 4 years, and had the opportunity to start my undergraduate degree at the University of Houston, and it's kind of where I got my start. I did do those summer internships while I was in undergrad, and moved on to do my graduate work at Stephen F. Austin, and in between there, I worked at I did my internship at the Bills for a full season in 2002. And I went and I was an assistant working men's basketball at Texas A&M and College Station in between that. And an opportunity came open at the Buffalo Bills for an assistant. I was very hesitant. I was used to the nice Texas weather and 75 and 85 degrees. And the president at the Buffalo Bills convinced me that he thought that I had a bright future at the Bills and that I'd do an outstanding job there. And so I was talked into moving back up to Buffalo in 2004 as an assistant. And I've been here ever since, been promoted, but it's been a great experience. And I've enjoyed myself here, and I enjoy my job. I enjoy the profession. So,
all right. So real quick, you have like a 1 year gap in between. So like in 1998 and 2000, 2002, between your work with the NFL, why did you end up taking those summers off in between?
Well, in 1998, I did my first internship with the Redskins. And 1999, I took it off because I was studying for my NATA exam. In 2000, I was still in graduate school, but I took Sandy Miller, the athletic trainer at Stephen F. Austin, gave me an opportunity to perform an internship, and I was only there for 6 weeks at the New York Giants, but I got a lot out of that position and a lot out of the internship. And in 2001, I was graduating. So I was just really looking for jobs and looking for positions. I wasn't really looking to do a year-long internship. And I got a call. I was recommended by Ronnie Barnes, the head athletic trainer at the New York Giants. Bud Carpenter, the head athletic trainer at the Bills, had heard a lot about me, and he thought that I could that I would be perfect for an internship up at the Buffalo Bills to improve my resume. So it was great.
All right. So Dr. Yellen also brought some of his students. Yellen, why don't you introduce your students, and then you guys go ahead.
Hey, Sean. So you've probably met a couple of them. To my left is Rachel Poe, and these are all second-year MAT students. Rachel Poe, her current assignment is with the University of Houston Sports Medicine. She works specifically with football. To her left is Cody Painter, another second-year MAT student. Cody's current assignment is with the Houston Texans with Jeff Kaplan and Roland. And then to his left is Elena Frank, and Elena's current assignment is with Rice University Sports Medicine, specifically with Rice football. So they all have interests in going into the NFL, and I think they can gain quite a bit from some of your insight, just so everybody listening knows. And so, Jeremy, you know, in the three second years coming out, Sean and I disagree on almost everything, with the exception of the fact that we are passionate about athletic training. So we constantly are looking at the same picture, typically through two different lenses. What I admire about Sean is that I think both of us are willing to meet in the middle somewhere and figure out, you know, how does this work? And so some of the conversations that we have over the phone are outstanding. I mean, they're epic. They're real. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And like Josh said, we do have some interesting takes. So one thing I do respect about what Josh and he's done at the University of Houston is I think the one thing that he'll tell you is we're both passionate about athletic training, education, and about students. Mm-hmm. You know, how we get there sometimes is a little bit, you know, with some other things, it is a little bit around the way, but I have so much respect for the job that he's done and at the University of Houston. And ironically, Jeff Kaplan and I were just running. He ran to his room, which is next door to mine, and I'm here because we both have talks that we have to do. But I'm excited because one of our players on our team actually went to high school with Cody.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well,
that's right.
So, who's that?
Marquise Goodwin.
Oh, yeah.
He graduated a year above me.
Huh. Yeah. And so,
yeah, I graduated in 1992. You got anybody? I mean, they're all...
Yeah. Josh, you're old. I was a sophomore in high school.
Thanks, buddy. At least, I mean, you're only 2 years behind me. Appreciate it. Yeah, half the people that are in our program weren't even born yet. So,
no. Well, great.
So I think these three, they have some questions for you, Sean.
Okay. No, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll start, and I'll ask, you have your summer interns and your year-long interns that you hire. Out of those, the ones that excel and impress you the most, what commonalities do they have that you can share with us?
Well, I will tell you that they have a unbelievable work ethic and a drive to be better. You know, I will tell you, most of these summer interns, we're very fortunate, and somebody brought this to my attention. Right now, we're having our educational session for the Professional Football Athletic Trainers Society. And downstairs right now, eight members and five of the new members in the PFATs were Buffalo Bills interns. Hmm. And people asked me, what are you doing up in Buffalo? What are you doing to you're getting all these guys? They're preparing themselves for the NFL. The one thing I will tell you is that each of those individuals, they have an amazing work ethic. They have the ability to relate to people, and they have a drive to succeed and be better. And they have an energy and the passion and a passion for the profession that is unyielding. I mean, they love what they do. And, you know, when Josh will tell you, you know, I think when we were going through our programs and going through school, we called them grinders. Mm-hmm. These are kids that literally love the profession. They eat it up. They soak up everything that they can. And we've been very fortunate here at the Bills. I tell people we do not choose athletic training interns. We select them, and we do, and we vet them. And from everything from their educational background to interviews to what they want to do to be successful. And so we have been very fortunate to have some outstanding people. I am excited for those individuals who do work in professional football, but I'm also excited for the individuals, you know, the Anthony Venutis, who's the head athletic trainer at UCLA, mm-hmm. and Tyler Wade, who's the head athletic trainer at Villanova. All those guys have come through our program, and they have those same characteristics that I was just talking to you guys about. And I love students. I love students, and I love people who work hard and who are willing to put in the effort, both in the classroom and outside of the classroom.
Sean, I have a question for you from the educational perspective. So right now there's a trend or a thought process that if you're going to be in the NFL, then you need to be duly credentialed as a PT/AT. From where you are, what are you seeing? And are those your recommendations?
Well, no, I've seen it both ways. You know, I think it's great if someone has the ability, if you can get both credentials. I think physical therapists and athletic trainers I think we work in conjunction. We work really well together. I think the NFL about 4 or 5 years ago in their collective bargaining agreement specified that you had to have a physical therapist on staff. Most of my colleagues, they have it was an extra opportunity for us to get a physical therapist, but make sure that person was an athletic trainer as well. Mm-hmm. you know, on my staff right now, we have six full time, four are ATCs. One is a PTATC, and we have one that is a PT only. And in our league, I think it is about getting the best person, whether or not they're dual credentialed. I think it makes you obviously more marketable and advantageous and gives you and opens up some other doors for you. But like I said, I feel like our individuals that are ATCs on our staff, they've done a good job. Athletic trainers is just as qualified to do rehab and treatments and some other things as therapists are. And it's been, I think that's not necessarily, how do I put it? I don't think you have to have both credentials. I think if you do, it's an added bonus.
Okay. I have a question. So when you guys are looking at interns and selecting them, what kinds of things are you seeing on resumes that are making those individuals stand out to make you say, okay, I want to give this person an interview and, you know, see what they have to say?
Okay, well, let me tell you, for me, it starts with coursework a little bit. I mean, the program directors. It used to be when Josh and I were coming up, we used to have the internship route, and it was easy to call references because and find out how a person's personality was and how their work ethic were and some other things. Well, with us switching now, and especially with us moving to the new master's programs, to me, I like to look at resumes. I like to look at students' coursework and some of their assignments, some of their clinicals that they've had. I'm a little bit different because I don't necessarily, if they have some football experience, that's great. But I like to see students that have a varied background with different sports, not necessarily with football. And that's probably the first thing I look at. The second thing I look at that I do is I call the program directors, because those program directors, especially with the new master's students, they have an intimate knowledge of what the students are like and checking off on their clinical sites. And so I depend on those people to give me some insight in how the student's doing in class, how they've done on their clinicals, and how they're progressing. I will tell you that the last two individuals that I have hired as athletic trainers here at the Buffalo Bills, Bill Quick, my newest assistant, well, I have one newer than that now, but Bill, who I hired last year, Bill's clinical assignments when he was in graduate school were volleyball. And he had his football experience. He had a little bit in his undergrad, but his was volleyball. And I was intrigued by his resume because he had been on his own in an untraditional sport environment, and he had done a good job. And Danny Poole, the athletic trainer at Clemson, when I called him, assured me that, Sean, he hasn't worked football, but this is somebody, if I had the opportunity to hire, I would. And so it kind of opened the door. I think the other thing about students that are applying to us are, you know, to gain an interview, I think resumes are huge. I don't do too well with I get a lot of resumes with mistakes. And to me, what you put on your resume is a reflection of yourself. And you know, I'm looking for somebody to set themselves apart from other candidates around the country. We take 7 to 9 people this year. I think we're taking 7 right now. And our students counted the other day. I had, 340 resumes. So it's tough to separate out of there. And I depend on some references.
Okay.
With me, I did an internship with the Houston Texans. And without a doubt, the reason I got that internship, because I was at Houston Baptist, there was no football, but it was because of Bob Marley. Mm-hmm. Bob Marley took and handed my resume to Kevin Bastine. Mm-hmm. And so.
And Kevin now is the head athletic trainer with Detroit Lions.
Correct.
Yep.
And so, again, it's the connection, like you were just saying, the program director. Now, you know, Josh and Sean are good friends, so Sean can easily call Josh, hey, can we bring on one of these three? Sure. Or heck no.
And I think one of the aspects is that one of the benefits that we have of being the only program in Houston is that everybody that we're affiliated with knows who we are and what we do. And so although somebody may not interact with one of our approved preceptors, whatever it is, these students are so visible throughout the community that what it really takes is one interaction, and all of a sudden somebody like Rachel, Cody, Elena, somebody calls on their behalf to say, look, this is somebody that I had a chance to work with, and you need to be able to take that. And I think there's some buzzwords, Sean, that you used when somebody says, you know, if I had a chance to hire them right now, I would. Because yep. I think that's a, you know, incredible endorsement. And I've used those types of phrases before, that when people call me, I, you know, I'm very open with them. Ask me specific questions and I'll give you specific answers. Because I want to be able to do the best job I can for somebody like Sean, because the more successful our students are, the more successful our program will be. So I think that's some really good advice that you're giving, Sean.
Well, I will tell you this, and I will say to your students, is you guys have an unbelievable opportunity there in the city of Houston with Memorial Hermann, and you guys have Rice as a clinical site, and you have the Ironman Sportsman. I mean, there are so many opportunities. I was very fortunate to work. He was a lot younger, and I was a lot younger, working with Dr. Walter Lowe. And I worked with Dr. Lowe when he was young, and he was a go-getter, and he still is. But he was really, really passionate. And so as I was exposed to a lot early on in my career in athletic training, and you guys have some unbelievable resources there. I walked into your classroom last year when I spoke to you guys, and I was blown away about the facilities and the things that you guys have been exposed to at the University of Houston, that I got a great education, and I'm very appreciative of Mike O'Shea and the HSP for giving me an opportunity. But you guys have some amazing resources that I'm frankly jealous of.
Sean, I'm going to address the elephant in the room. Sorry, Rachel, do you have a question?
Oh, no, go ahead.
I'm going to address the elephant in the room, Sean.
Okay.
And that is the move to the entry-level master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that obviously from my end as an educator, you know, I see the picture through a different lens. And so if you were to give some advice to the students that are coming out of entry-level master's degrees, give them three things that they can walk away with. We already talked about work ethic. We talked about resumes. We talked about connections. And we talked about diversity of experience.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other key factors for somebody that's coming out of an entry-level master's degree that they need to know from your end?
Well, the key thing is make yourself our experiences. I think I know a lot of you guys have expressed an interest in the NFL. I will tell you that I have no doubt that from the standpoint of Dr. Yellen and the University of Houston and Dr. Knoblauch, they're going to prepare you to pass your test and to become certified. The key things are your experiences after. So I lean on students sometimes when they come out. At our level, Texas is the hotbed right now. It's the hotbed for athletic training because there's so many high school jobs out there, and there's so many opportunities right there financially where you can start work right away. If you do have an opportunity, if you have the desire to work at this level, I encourage you to potentially look to do an NFL internship after you finish your degree. I look downstairs right now, and I see young ladies like Tiffany Morton at the Kansas City Chiefs down in our meeting just now. And Tiffany talks about, she was at a high school in Florida, and she finished her degree. And she got her entry-level master's at FIU, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. And she worked at a high school part-time, and she could have worked at a high school the rest of her life. But she put her resume out there and decided the National Football League is something that she wanted to give a try. And, you know, at the time, there was probably one female seasonal intern in the NFL. And I think this year, in talking to the guys downstairs today, I think they're going to be like six this year. So I think it's about, knowing what you want to do, or knowing what your dream, what your desire to do is, and to give yourself an opportunity, put yourself out there as far as applying. I do agree with Josh will tell you, you know, we've been very fortunate to have some great students come out of our entry-level master's program that we deal here with Damon College. And like I said, I am a little stubborn about it because I came from a program from an under, and I was an undergraduate guy through and through. And it's very hard for me to see the change. Josh will tell you, I can be a little stubborn about it. I have my own issues with the Katy a little bit, but I will tell you that I'm a big believer in, to me, it's about the education. And I've seen, I do understand that the entry-level master's program, whether it be at the University of Houston, which I'm going to support more than anywhere, or Texas A&M or Stephen F. Austin, the entry-level master's programs are they're our future, and they're going to make the profession better.
Sean, let me ask you a question real quick. Going back to the undergrad experience.
Mm-hmm.
So how many hours, right, clinical education hours do you think you got? You see Cody, 2000.
Well, I'll tell you this. I bet – well, let me tell you. I worked for one Mike O'Shea.
Uh-huh.
So
and I will tell you. So it was.
How often did you show up at 4:30 in the morning?
I showed up at 4:30. My first week on campus was in 1994.
Uh-huh.
And
when human resources was non-existent. Go
and
ahead.
So I started off, and my first week there, I think I worked about 70 hours my first week. Now, we had no coursework and no classes, and we had scholarships and things like that. But I worked I got a lot of clinical hour experiences, and I think I've become – I was better for it. I think I was very fortunate that I look back on it that Josh will tell you, especially when we were coming out, they would – some of our head athletic trainers would give us a walkie-talkie and say, go out to a field. Mm-hmm. And we had no idea about an AED mm-hmm. or if something were to happen during a team run.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things I'm very thankful for, that nothing did happen while I was an undergraduate student. And that's one of the things I think that they do want to prevent by having some standards with the entry-level master's program. But I will, Cody, I will tell you this. It was well over 2,000.
I only said that because 1,800 is the minimum for taking the LAT in Texas.
Right. And I tell people all the time, if you want to know what my Texas licensure means to me, I am very fortunate, but I passed my Texas licensure before I got my NATA. And it's a big deal up in this part of the country when you tell somebody that you have your Texas licensure. These people are in awe about it because everybody gets nervous about moving to the state of Texas because there's a test. But I still maintain my Texas licensure up here in New York State, and I forever will, because that was a big achievement for me. It was a big achievement for me. It was a big achievement for the University of Houston and Joel Bloom and uh-huh. all those people who helped me attain it.
All right, so Josh, you kind of addressed it. Sean, you've kind of hinted at it, but and some of the old school people think that the entry-level master's students don't know how to work. They don't know how to put in that work.
Right.
Right, and so in your experience, is that something that you've seen, that those kids that are coming at the entry-level masters?
To answer this, so hang on.
I know, I'm asking Sean.
Yeah, there you go ahead. I'm foaming at the mouth. Just, go ahead, Sean. I just cannot.
Do they display that inability to put in the work? Because when I did my internship with the Texans, like you said, it was 100 hours mm-hmm. a week during training camp. Mm-hmm. Are they able to make that difference?
Yeah, you know what? I think they are. I think ultimately, the tough part is, and Josh will tell you, there used to be this stigma, and I think it's changing, is that you had students, I think, in talking to, I know when I was there before, I talked to Cody and I talked to some other students who were in U of H's program. I think the stigma is this supposed 20-hour a week rule, and that students can only work 20 hours a week, and that's all they can do. And I've kind of figured out over the last two years or so that, well, that's not necessarily true. There's not like a 20-hour a week rule. You know, students have to be given a day off, and their hours are limited somewhat. The one thing I think that, remember you talked about, Josh said he was foaming at the mouth. One of the things that that the only difference that I've had with any of it, I think the students are great. I think no matter where you come from, I think the entry-level master's program, because you got to realize this, students are still getting their clinical experiences somewhere. And clinical experiences, whereas I did a ton of hours in the internship route and had to work in the training room on the field, these students now have, I mean, I walk into the lab up at the University of Houston and they have taping tables and they have all of these things in a classroom setting. So they're getting a clinical experience at Rice, at Houston, during the marathon, at the Ironman, but they're also getting some clinical experience with Josh and Dr. Knobloch. The only issue that I have with Katie and some other people with our association is I have no problem with students working or my feelings about it. It to me, and me and Josh have talked about this, it's the volunteer thing. I think students should be, you know, I've had some programs up in this part of the country that have really struggled with students trying to volunteer and do some extra work.
I'm really proud of myself that I haven't been able to talk yet. But yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
But I wish students could volunteer a little bit more and really, you know, immerse themselves in a true experience. Because I think the thing that a lot of athletic trainers, and especially at my level, worry about are do students get a true understanding of what it's like? Take the NFL out of it, but I have friends that work especially at the collegiate level. And I just rolled through Columbus, Ohio, driving here on a Saturday. And these guys are working from 8 to 3 and 8 to 4 in Division I football on a Saturday. And but in saying that, I think it is I think students are getting I think they're getting a good experience. I don't think students who come out of, I think there's been some misconceptions that students who come out of entry-level master's program don't understand and they don't have the work ethic. And that's just that's not true at all. We've had some amazing people come through.
I think there are a lot of, we'll call them alternative facts. I think there are a lot of alternative facts. Mm-hmm. So a couple things, right? One is, as far as the Katie is concerned, the Katie doesn't dictate hours, and I've gone around. I'm glad you brought this up, Sean, because I've gone around to try to correct some people. Where that 20 hours a week came from, right, was that a lot of schools will use what their student workers do as a guideline. So typically a student worker is able to work 20 to 25 hours a week. How did they come up with that? Well, a full load for an undergraduate student is somewhere between 15 to 18 hours, right, of coursework, plus that 20 to 25, and you're averaging somewhere about 40 hours a week. And as far as human resources is concerned, that's a full work week. So there are a lot of schools that said, okay, well, we're going to use that. Over time, I think what ended up happening is that, unfortunately, there were a lot of program directors that hid behind that rule, right, and said, well, the KD would say this, or before it was the KD, it was KHEP and, you know, JRC and all these other things. No, the Katie doesn't say that. The Katie says that there needs to be a minimum and a maximum. And it's up to each university and each program to dictate what that minimum and that maximum is. So right now, our minimum is 10, our maximum is 30. One of the conversations we're having along the lines of what Sean just brought up is that do we need to push that? Maybe a minimum of 10 and a maximum of 40 for an average of 25. And the reason why is that we're seeing some really good benefits of what we call immersive experiences. So you can be immersive daily, you can be immersive in modules, or you can be immersive on a semester basis. So our program was set up to be a daily immersive experience. So the three that are here with me, Rachel, Cody, and Elena, they go to school Monday and Wednesday, and they have since they started their curriculum, which I think the exception of like Brett's class.
Yeah.
And the reason why that is so that they can have a clinical immersive experience. That means that when they're not in class on Monday, Wednesday, they typically go to their clinicals anyway, but that they are totally immersed Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and or Sunday. The Katie says that you have to have one day off every 7 days. And so there are some other aspects that are there. And so when you add all of this up, there is nothing that says that you need X amount of hours. It used to be that way, but there is nothing that says that. So you know, theoretically, a student can come out with all this experience. And one of the things that we talked about a couple weeks ago in the Athletic Trainer Educators Conference was there are programs now that are kind of experimenting with semester immersive experiences, which is great, because what that means is theoretically, if we had a semester-based experience, we could send students to Sean in Buffalo. We just, you know, what it is it's a conversation between our program and our administration to see what we, and then from an administrative aspect, I mean, you know, it becomes more and more complicated because of all the affiliation agreements and all those other things. The other thing that, you know, Sean talked about was that the undergraduate experience, there was an intern experience that was happening. And we need to be able to, as a profession, we need to move away from the athletic model into the medical model. And the medical model is always about patient outcomes. You can't tell me that you're producing patient outcomes or, you know, good patient outcomes with an untrained undergraduate student. No offense, Sean, because I was in the same boat you were. Right. When I was an undergraduate, I came out of an undergraduate AT school. I was given an athletic training kit and like a phone, and I was assigned to the female softball team at Cal State Northridge. And I went around the country with this team, and I was their only medical support for the entire season. I mean, you know, you call the head athletic trainer and say, hey, you know, Josh is coming and whatever it was, watch out for him. But that doesn't produce very good medical outcomes. And so I think one of the things that athletic training needs to do, and it is doing very well, is that we need to be able to move, again, away from that athletic model into the medical model. And then the last part about that is just like medicine, right? Somebody goes to medical school and they may choose to be a radiologist. And maybe that person's partner or, you know, the person's friend in school in their cohort may choose to be a trauma surgeon. Those two daily workloads are very different. The magic number in medicine is about 80, right, when they're doing residency. And Sean knows this. His brother's a physician. And so the magic number is 80. And so there's this fine balance of saying, okay, you're in school X amount and your clinical education, because it gives you a good idea of what it's going to be like and time management and all those other things. And so, again, it's about saying, one, are we following the medical model? Two, are we producing good patient outcomes? Three, are we giving students a good experience so they understand that, you know what, there are going to be times that if I'm in school for 11 hours, right, and plus all the exams and I got to write this case study and, you know, Yellen's on my butt about this. They always make fun of me. They've been reviewing for the BOC. And it's like apparently I say this a lot, like, you better know this. And then I throw up, you know, 50 slides.
You scroll through them.
Yeah, and then, you know, all of these other things on top of the 40 hours a week, on top of, right, they're constantly getting emails. Hey, we've got the Memorial Hermann, you know, Houston Rockets thing. I want you guys to be at the marathon. Here comes the Ironmans. All of these other things. And they're designed to say, one, in a profession, in any medical profession, you have to be able to handle the stress and the workload. Two, it's designed to make sure that we can produce a student who has all these different varied experiences. And three, it's very, very important to me, as long as I have breath in my lungs and I'm the director of this program, we will follow the medical model. And I won't go away from that. And I think one of the biggest issues that we're facing right now is that we're producing students whose content knowledge are far and above anybody we've ever seen. They know more than any, you know, I could put 20 athletic trainers in a room and we may be specialized in our own individual areas, but we don't know what they know overall. There's no way. And now, how do we make that transition to practice? I think the next big thing in athletic training is going to be the residency models. So if somebody wants to be in the NFL, they'll be able to, you know, they'll be able to have that, you know, year-long intern, but it'll be, you know, there'll be some sort of educational component to it. If somebody wants to go into occupational medicine, if somebody wants to go in the military, if somebody wants to go primary care, all those other things. And I think that's where we're heading. Okay. How did I do, Sean? Did I do okay?
Yes, you did okay, very good. Well, Josh.
Thanks.
All right, Sean, if someone wants to be successful in the NFL, you already talked about a very hard work ethic, but if an athletic trainer wants to be successful in the NFL, what do you think is the top skill that they need?
Well, let me tell you something. The one thing, Jeremy, that I'll tell you, and I've lived it through, and I'm living it right now with my new head coach, I will tell, and ironically, Ronnie Barnes, the head athletic trainer for the Giants, and Pepper Burris, who's up at the Green Bay Packers. I had this conversation probably 2 hours ago. The single biggest thing I've learned is to be a great communicator and be willing to listen. you will keep a job in the National Football League a long time, as long as you're upfront and you communicate and be willing to listen. I'm a big believer in that students sometimes, you'll be talking sometimes, but they're not always listening. So I've learned to – I try to encourage students to be better listeners and communicate. And those two things are, to me, are vital to be successful in our league, whether it be communicating with the coach about an injury, communicating with the coach about a surgery, communicating about a person who is undergoing a surgery, communicating with your front office, communication within your within the athletic training staff, communicating with the strength and conditioning staff at the collegiate level, you know, communicating with the academic department about the individual who has a concussion and might not be able to sit through class, you know, at the high school level, communicating with the parents. To me, it's vital to do well in athletic training.
I think Rachel has a question for you.
I do.
Okay.
I was going to ask, how important do you feel it is to be involved in professional organizations and take on those kind of leadership roles, not just in the NFL, but just in general as athletic trainers?
Well, I tell people this. I got involved in working for Mike O'Shea at Houston and Sandy Miller. I took on too much within our profession because I was on the ethnic diversity committee and I'm on the honors and awards committee and I was on this. I'm still on the scholarship committee those things to me, I think especially as students, you guys, there are so many opportunities to be on the young professionals committee and some other things. If you have the opportunity, there's nothing like getting involved with our association and getting to meet different people in the profession. And for me, it wasn't just about the NFL. I've developed some amazing relationships with some friends of mine who work at NASA or who work at Cirque du Soleil or who, you know, or who are into the arts. They're athletic trainers. You know, I met today. We had a meeting. We met with an athletic trainer who is in NASCAR. It's amazing. I will tell you that I took something away that I think is going to be able to help our team in the NFL today from a guy, from an athletic trainer who works in NASCAR. So I think being involved in the association and being involved in some committee work and being involved with the NATA is unbelievable. You guys, the other thing that I would encourage you to do, you guys are a part of SWATA, which is the best student district in the country. It's not even close. You have your Texas State Athletic Trainers Association and some things that I still constantly check up on. And so feel proud of it and feel, you know, get immersed in those things. And like I said, you guys heard Josh talk about, we may disagree on some things, but I'll tell you the one thing that we surely do agree on is being passionate about students, passionate about the profession, getting students involved, and making them better professionals that we're going to put out there.
Thank you. They hear it from me all. You know what this is about? This is exactly. So my wife and my son last weekend, they had to go to California. And so my son is sitting with two of my brother-in-laws and two of my brother-in-laws, they tell Matt a story and some advice. And he calls me and he's like, Dad, this is what Uncle Pat and Uncle Jimmy said. And I'm like, uh-huh. And so then my wife got back on the phone. She says, I know what you're going to say. It's the same thing that you've been saying. And I said, right. And that's the same thing that I would hear, that I would say for the students, right? Over a two-year period, they see me all the time. And they get barrages of emails. And at some point, just like Elena did not too long ago, rolls her eyes at me like, oh my God. And I think it's always good to hear it from somebody else that there are some universal laws that apply. And those universal laws are this, to be able to be passionate about what you do, to be able to be willing to work hard, to be able to say, it's okay if I fail. because I know that I'm surrounded by people that care for me and that they'll pick me up and I'll be able to continue on. To be able to say, you know, this is where I want to go and maybe I'm the first. And, you know, Sean, you said I think there are 6 or 7 females now in the NFL. And I cannot wait for the day that there is a female head athletic trainer in the NFL. There was one already in baseball, Sue Falzone, and she's with A.T. Still and with Eric Sauers now. So we're not far off, and it's possible that, you know, Rachel and Elena, they may be one of the first. It's going to be somebody. It's going to be somebody, and I hope it's one of them.
Josh, you know where Sue's hometown is?
I did. Is it Texas?
It's Buffalo, New York.
Oh, it's Buffalo, New York. I thought you were going to say it's like Los Angeles where I – yeah.
But, no, I see your mom all the time grocery shopping.
Really?
Yeah.
Sue is outstanding. I don't know if you guys know, but Sue is one of the leaders in dry needling. Yeah. And Sue is on faculty.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, Sue is on faculty with mm-hmm. Eric Sauers. Eric Sauers is one of the commissioners with the Katie and is the department chair of interdisciplinary studies at A.T. Still University. And they just started up a DAT program, and Sue teaches in that program.
She was supposed to teach my dry needling course mm-hmm. back in May, but uh-huh. dropped out and someone else picked it up.
Yeah. Yeah. She's outstanding and is a real leader in all different aspects.
So real quick, as we're kind of wrapping up the NFL, guys, I know I've talked a little bit about my experience with the NFL, but don't do like I did. I actually got in trouble because one of the players was like, here, you can borrow my car for the weekend. I was like, all right, cool. You know, it was an Escalade with spinners. And so I did. Well, the security guys didn't like that. They called the athletic trainer, which at the time was John Iship, mm-hmm. and he said, Jeremy, bring your pass. You're done.
You're done.
Yeah, and so no. So just like that, you know, I had Bob Marley vouch for me, hey, this guy's good, mm-hmm. and I did. I worked hard. I did, and I got the opportunity to continue to volunteer through the season for home games, but then just like that, I screwed it up. So I don't talk about it much because it's kind of embarrassing, but it shaped who I am, and so don't do like that. Take advantage of every opportunity to learn.
And that's the point, Jeremy, is that in that sense, you may have thought that you failed, but you didn't, right? It's a learning experience.
Right.
And you moved on. You thought, all right, I'm never going to do that again. It's never a mistake unless you do the same thing twice, right? The first time it's a mistake. The second time is a choice, right? That's the way it works.
Well, do you guys have any additional questions for me or...
I have one more question. So when you're looking at your interns and you're looking at who's applying and you see things on their resumes like Graston, dry needling, or they've got their CES or CSCS, which of those kind of extra credentialings, like what really isn't valuable, I guess, which ones are more valuable than others?
You know, I don't think one's more valuable than the other. I will tell you, I'm a big fan of students, if you have the opportunity, only because you're learning it while you're getting your master's and you're in your master's program. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, if you have the opportunity to get your strength and conditioning credential, do it. Okay. It makes you so much more marketable. And to be an athletic trainer and a strength coach, mm-hmm. because I think you're going to see more and more athletic trainers move into the model of being directors of performance. And it's great if you have the medical and you have the performance aspect of it.
Right.
I do have some minor issues with the NSCA, but for their credential, they do a really good job and it's valid. And but no, I have my CES, I have my PES, I've done all those things. It's a little bit different up here in New York because we can't dry needle. Right. But any extra credentials, do I look at those? Yeah, I do, especially when we're looking for our seasonal position. And I'm very honest with students who decide once they get done, you know, maybe some. I'll use Cody as the example. He's working with the Texans, and he's working with some outstanding people, and Roland Ramirez and Jeff Kaplan, and you're going to learn a ton. And let's say he finishes that experience and decides that he wants to do an internship somewhere for a year. In our room right now, 92% of the people, and I think it's even higher than that now, who are working full time in the National Football League have done a year-long internship somewhere. Mm-hmm. And you know, the only thing that's I'd love to take somebody from, you know, for our program to bring up here. The key thing, I don't know how, I never asked Josh this, how he feels about it, but if you have the opportunity to take your BOC early, do it.
Mm-hmm. Take your, we know he does not feel
he just doesn't feel like we're ready.
Right. Well, and I get it, because let me tell you, you guys passing or failing is huge. It goes on their record. I mean, it's an important deal. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that it's tougher for me in my position, because whoever comes in here to work with us for a year, I don't treat our – we don't even call our position an intern position. We call them we have some fancy name. We call them an assistant athletic training something. But the key thing for me, even though it's somewhat of an intern position, we give them the freedom to make some decisions. And it's not that we're everywhere in the NFL, I can tell you that. But it's very important that they have their ATC. Mm-hmm. And most people in Texas, you know, most of you guys have your licensure already. I know Cody has his. You know, if you grew up in the state, you have it already. But no. So that's my biggest advice. Extra credentials are great, but anything that you can do and you can utilize to make yourself better, I would tell you to do it and go for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In our program, Dr. Yellen says it's – taking it in February is not part of the process, because currently we're taking our seminar class, preparing us for the boards that are coming up in March and April.
Remember when I told you guys there's some things that we fundamentally that we can disagree on?
Yeah.
There's some things I could, but no, I do understand it. I see both sides of it, and I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I've you know, here at Canisius College and Damon College, they do the exact same thing. Mm.
We have time for more questions.
Sure. Well, Sean, you still got a few more minutes?
Yep, I got a few more minutes.
Okay. So I know we kind of talked about it earlier. You like to see students that have a wide variety of clinical experiences, not just with football. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about a student that maybe they work D1, you know, football for an internship, or maybe, you know, they went to a high school for a year or two? Do you still think those students have a chance when they're applying for NFL internships, if that's what they want to do? Do you guys still consider them, you know, as highly, or would you really rather see that collegiate experience somewhere, you know, somewhere collegiate experience?
No, I think, once again, we've had so many students through here. I try to give you guys examples. And there's a young lady right now who her name is Tamaria Hollis, and she was a GA, but she's getting ready to get hired on full time, and she's going to work football at Michigan State. And we hired her she was a student out of LSU, and she had worked track and field, and she worked soccer, and she worked softball. And but one of the things that I respected was that I interviewed her, and her experience that she raved about was her high school experience. And I will tell you that those experiences to me can do nothing but help you. Now that's just me. I know a lot of some other NFL teams that feel a little differently, but I will tell you is, especially in the state of Texas, especially at the secondary school level, you see so much and you're exposed to so much. You know, Mike Overman, who's a friend of mine, he was a student below me. He's at Magnolia High School in Houston. Mm-hmm. And he talks to me about the different injuries he's seen and things that he does. And I don't see some of those things in the National Football League.
Right.
But I don't think those experiences are going to hurt you at all. I think they can do nothing but help you. I think if you have been over at to continue to expand your network, have any of you guys been over at Rice?
We both have, and I worked Rice football the entire season.
Yeah. And let me tell you, Scott McGonigal knows everybody. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, things have changed over there a little, but but Scott is tremendous. He was at the University of Miami, and he was he's won national championships and a ton of athletic training of the year awards. He's just but between that experience, the experience at the University of Houston, I have the utmost respect for John Houston and Mike and what those guys are doing. And those are the experiences that they helped me with. Those are the things that I did. I was very fortunate to lean on those guys. And, you know, my last three experiences at the University of Houston were with swimming and diving. Ugh. Soccer. And what was my last one with? It was, oh, baseball.
Okay.
And I went to graduate school, and I never worked football in grad school at Stephen F. Austin. I worked women's soccer and softball for 2 years. But those experiences with those sports helped shape me and make me the athletic trainer I am today. And that's what I tell all of our staff here. Well, Cody, I'll be sure to tell Jeff Kaplan and Roland that you said hello when I go back downstairs.
Absolutely. Please do that for me.
I will. I'll definitely do it. And Jeremy, I appreciate everything. I appreciate you guys having me on. And let me know if I can do anything to help any of you. I'd be more than happy.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Last thing, Sean, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, maybe ask you some more questions or apply to your program, how's the best way to do that?
The best way is to, you can email me, and the easiest email to get me at is billstrainer@mac.com. And so if you can get me there, and for any of the other students there, you guys, let me know. I'll give you my cell number if you want to talk about anything, or you can catch me on Facebook. No Twitter, no Instagram, no Snapchat. Facebook is that's the way I go. That's as far as I go with social media.
That'll work. All right, you guys, Yellen didn't give the plug for the University of Houston Master of Athletic Training Program. Do you guys know the website?
You can just UH.edu, and then you can search the MAT program. Or honestly, right now, if you Google UHMAT program, we are the first result. Yeah.
There you go. So UofHMAT, University of Houston, MAT, Masters of Athletic Training, Houston, any one of those. So, All right. So for Jeremy, again, we are right on the edge of National Athletic Training Month when we're recording this. This will be released later, but so happy National Athletic Training Month, and hopefully you're doing something to celebrate athletic training. Sean Gibson, Buffalo Bills head athletic trainer, thank you so much for joining us. The University of Houston Master's Athletic Training students, thank you very much.
Thank you.